Okay, Erev Tov, everybody. A pleasure to see everybody, and welcome back to Rabbi Friedman, who's always ready and happy to teach Torah, and really a pleasure to welcome him back. Rabbi Friedman, of course, is the rabbi of Teaneck Jewish Center in Teaneck, New Jersey. He's a Rebbe at TABC, where Rabbi Stochel, my chavrusa, Yoredea, just took over as head of school. So please give Rav Shlomo my best. We really do come to visit him very often when we do come to Teaneck. So hope you're enjoying TABC and Teaneck. It really is a hopping place. So back to Rabbi Friedman. Oh boy. Okay, Rabbi Friedman, it's all yours.
Okay, yeah. I just wanted to thank Rabbi Kelman. It's always so special to be with Torah in Motion community, and you really appreciate the opportunity to learn with each other and from each other over the course of the next hour or so. Rabbi Kelman has already given his gushpanka to Parshas Yisro, I agree, obviously, and there's really much to discuss, but what I'd like to key in on is the persona of Yisro, and that in two different respects. The first is we know that the very name Yisro, Rashi comments at the beginning of the parasha, is actually derived from the language of Yeser, that Yisro was responsible for adding an entire section to the Torah, a very critical section, the advent of the judiciary, Sarei Alefim, Sarei Meos, Sarei Chamishim, Sarei Asaros. It's in a very fascinating dialogue back and forth between Yisro and Moshe Rabbeinu, that eventually leads to the creation of the Jewish judiciary as we know it. There are different opinions in the Mefarshim exactly what the role of the judiciary is and how the different levels interact with each other, but we're not going to get into that level of detail tonight, but I'm going to ask a bit of a more fundamental question, and then I'll present my second question. So the fundamental question I'd like to ask is, where did Yisro get the audacity to make these suggestions? We're told at the very beginning of the Sedra that Yisro, was moved to come, and we'll discuss this in some detail as we move forward tonight, by the great events that had transpired since he last saw his son-in-law, events that had really turned the world on its head and challenged, the dynamics of the entire region. As we know from the Shir HaSayam that we read last week, Namogu Kol Yoshei Kenan, Elei Moav Yochazemo Ra'ad, right? Everybody was trembling and quaking. It was an enormous series of events. And to show up and to start, making suggestions, Vayhimi Macharas, Vayeshev Moshe Lishbor Esa'am, Vayamor Am Moshe, Minaboker Ad Arev, and for Yisro to have the audacity to say, Lo Tov HaDavar Asher Ata Osela Am, it takes a certain degree of gumption, and maybe that's a very generous way of putting it. I don't know how many of us would show up in a place, especially after, the world got turned on its head on behalf of these people under the leadership of, Moshe Rabbeinu, and to start, making unsolicited suggestions. It's a little bit or a lot of a strange phenomenon. It should give all of us a sense of pause. It's like, again, Mashal Mahadavra Dome, if somebody was the head of a nation state and the economy was growing at an annual rate of 20% and the GDP was, doubling every 2 years. And then, somebody shows up and starts giving advice about how to run the country. It might not be appreciated so well. And the last time we checked, things were going okay. There's been the Makos, there's been Yitzias Mitzrayim, maybe there's been even more than that, as we'll discuss. So, what was the permission structure exactly for Yisro to make this a contribution as he saw it? And indeed, it really was a contribution. It's part of his identity. It's his very name, Sheyiter Parsha Achas Batorah. But I'd like to try to understand that a little bit better, because I think there actually is a very distinctive or discrete permission structure. Now, this leads me to arguably an even more fundamental question, which has to do with the placement of this story, of this Parsha Achas, of this additional section of the Torah, which was included right before Matan Torah. They say, that in real estate, location is everything. And the same can be said, Lahavdil, when it comes to the Torah. So to be like this section before we read the Aseres HaDibros is obviously Omer Darsheni, right? It's a remarkable kind of a thing that this is the way that we lead into Matan Torah. And that, and part of that is amplified by a very fascinating discussion in the Gemara and Masech Tezvachim and Kuf Tezayin as to when exactly Yisro came. According to the Ramban, who always prefers to say that the Torah is very much written and presented in order, Yesh Mukdam Uchar Batorah, not a view that's shared by everybody. But according to the Ramban, Yisro Kodem Matan Torah Ba. He came before Matan Torah. But nonetheless, right, even if he came before Matan Torah, the fact that the Torah chooses to present the story in the lead up to the Aseres HaDibros is certainly noteworthy. But according to the other view, a view which is endorsed by a goodly number of Rishonim, that Yisro la'achar Matan Torah ba, that he actually came after Matan Torah, which even the Ramban admits, you know, has its benefits. It has what to recommend it within this context. After all, you know, what was Moshe judging the people about if it wasn't, you know, halachos that were given at Sinai? So even the Ramban is willing to make that concession, though he's not willing to concede the point overall. So the question is that much sharper and more pressing, right? How could it possibly be that the Torah is going out of its way to front load the story of this man, of Yisro, you know, as a lead-in to Matan Torah? So the question becomes amplified and even more profound. So I'd like to try to address both of these issues. So as I mentioned, the Chazal were very fascinated by what exactly triggered Yisro's journey into the desert. El Hamidbar Asher Hu Choneshem Har Elokim. Chazal say Yatsa Mikavodo Shel Olam, that he left a position of great prestige and significance. He's the Kohen Midyan. He's a man of consequence in his location, and he gives all that up to come to a forlorn and barren desert. Makom Tziavit Salmaves. What was it that inspired Yisro? So there are three different views which are suggested in Chazal, three primary views, I should say. One of them is the splitting of the sea, Kriyas Yamsuf. The other is Milchames Amalek. And according to the view that Yisro la'achar Matan Torah ba, it might have been Maimid Har Sinai itself, the very giving of the Torah, revelation at Sinai, which we'll get to later in the parasha. But what I think is particularly striking, even more than any of these approaches, each of which is fascinating and really a subject in its own right to evaluate and will lead one necessarily to different understandings, different perceptions and perspectives about who Yisro was. But what strikes me as even more significant is the fact that such a machlokas could exist. And it can only exist because of a deliberate ambiguity in the Torah. And methodologically speaking, this is a very important point that I'd like to emphasize. The Torah tells us at the beginning of the Sedra, Vayishma Yisro. And the Sforo notes that normally it would say Vayar. Vayar has two meanings in the biblical narrative. One is to literally see in the sense of, you know, optically perceive something. The other is to understand, as in the case of Vayar Yaakov ki yeshever b'Mitzrayim. You know, Yaakov didn't see the grain that was being stored in Mitzrayim. He understood that this was what was going on. So the Sforno points out, Vayishma Yisro means that he understood something in perhaps an even deeper way. And what did he understand? So Vayishma Yisro, Chayin Midyan Chosein Moshe, Eiz Kol Asher Asa Elokim Moshe Yisro Lamo, Ki Otzi Hashem Es Yisrael Mim Mitzrayim. So there's some ambiguity here about which aspect was, you know, most compelling. And again, that's why there's room, Kriyas Yamsuf, Milchames Amalek, you know, Maimid Har Sinai itself, whatever direction a person wants to say, wherever one thinks the indications are. But like I say, it's really a deliberate ambiguity where the Torah could have easily told us what was the immediate antecedent. What was the trigger for Yisro? What was it that moved him? Maybe it was all of these things in aggregate. But the point is, the Torah could have chosen to make that very clear. And when the Torah doesn't do that, I think it's always for a reason. And in this case, I would like to suggest that the Torah is very intent on presenting Yisro as an Ish HaShomea, Vayishma Yisro. More important than whatever he heard in particular was the idea that he was a person who was willing to listen. A person who was willing to listen. Many people are capable of hearing in the auditory sense, but the idea that Yisro was a person who was willing to listen and willing to listen in the sense of really being edified and being illuminated, and even prepared to act on other people's insights, perspectives, even being prepared to be yotzei michvodo shel olam, to leave a place of prestige and comfort for something much less than that. This is a defining attribute and characteristic of who Yisro is. Yisro, as we know, is a person of many layers to his identity, Sheva Shemos. Each name connotes a different part of his identity. And one of the names of Yisro is Putiel. Putiel describes Yisro's theological journey, Shepitem Agalim La'avodazara. You might think of that as an insult, that he had a background as a polytheist, as a pagan, as somebody who was involved, as Chazal say, based on the pasuk at the opening of the Sedra, Tayadati, Ki Gadol Hashem Mikol Ho Elohim, Ki Badavar Asher Zadu Aleihem, that Yisro had experience with the entire pantheon, literally every form of Avodah Zarah known to the ancient world. Yisro had explored, he had investigated, he had practiced. And again, people could look at this and say, either, you know, he's the most disloyal, you know, Kohen in the world, or that there's something very authentic about Yisro, and that he was a seeker in the genuine sense of the term, and he was looking for something truthful. And that willingness to listen, that openness of perspective, is something that stands to his great credit, because ultimately that did bring him to the truth. It didn't happen right away, but Vayishma Yisro. Yisro was able to perceive events that were happening around him that, frankly, not everybody reacted to precisely the same way. As I mentioned before, in the context of Kriyas Yamsuf, we know very well that others perceived it, and maybe justly so, as a threat. Namogu kol yoshvei Kenan, they trembled. Elei Moav yochazemo ra'ad, right? There was trembling, there was fear, right? Instead of perhaps an opportunity for reflection, you know, and deeper consideration of a lifestyle change, none of that happened. It was simply perceived in terms of fear. Moreover, right, especially according to the Man D'Amar, according to the view, Milchemes Amalek Shama, that he heard about the war of Amalek, Amalek takes exactly the opposite reaction, right? Vayavo Amalek, Vayilachem Yisrael Berfidim. It's not as if everybody heard about the events of Yitzias Mitzrayim and decided to make profound changes to their lives, to come and to be Nichnas Tachas Kanfei Ashchina, to engage in some kind of a prospect and process of Giyur that Yisro did. Amalek took precisely the opposite path. And yet, right, Yisro did what he did. And it's unique, and it's very, very much to his credit. And I'd like to suggest, as a response to the first question that I posed, you know, what gave Yisro the permission structure, the matir, if I could use the technical term, to make a suggestion which seems utterly out of place, audacious, even brazen, within the context of somebody who just arrived to a people that was clearly so close to God, that had benefited from so much divine blessing and intervention on their behalf, I believe the permission structure is Vayishma Yisro. It wasn't as if Yisro had no skin in the game, right? In contrast to that, Yisro had been willing himself to listen and make fundamental and far-reaching changes in terms of his own lifestyle and his own, you know, worldview and his own practice, right? You know, the overriding view, not every Rishon accepts this, the Chizkuni might be a notable exception, but Rashi, Ibn Ezra, the Ramban, the Sforno, and many, 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 many of the leading Achronim all assume that Yisro really was Megayer, that he, you know, was Nichnas Tachas Kanfei Ashchina. He became a member of the Jewish people. Vayichad Yisro, says the Tanchuma, Al Tikre Vayichad, Ela Vayichad, he joined the Yehudim. And that's why, you know, just like Hartzah's Damim, offering a karban is an inextricable part of the process of Giyur, so Yisro brings a karban solidify and concretize his process of Giyur, which is declaimed by the statement, Atayadati ki gadol Hashem Mikol ho Elohim kiva davar asher zadu alehem. So what I'm suggesting is a person who's willing to listen, a person who's opened themselves to make fundamental and far-reaching changes has much more credibility, much more of a leg to stand on when it comes to making suggestions to others. This isn't a person who comes riding on his high horse with all of the answers. This is a person, right, who acts humbly, who acts and says, you know what, even though I was a Kohen Midyan, maybe it was I was on the wrong track. Atayadati ki gadol Hashem mikol Elohim. And that kind of a person has a much greater, credibility and, reliability when it comes to suggestions of how improvements can be made, especially improvements that aren't nearly as fundamental as the changes that he was willing to make. What I'd like to suggest is, in fact, that we see that this quality of Vayishma Yisro, whatever it was particularly that he heard, but I think the Torah is being deliberately ambiguous to highlight Yisro's credentials as a Shomea, somebody who is willing to internalize, to listen, and to even make changes based on, experiences that he was having. What I'd like to suggest is that this is actually the indispensable quality of Dayanim. We all know that Yisro lays out, some basic qualities that Moshe should be looking for. V'atasa chazem mikol am, anshei chayil, yirei Elokim, anshei emes, sonei vatza, right? So people of integrity, and maybe even people of means, people who aren't rodfei mamon, they're not people that are fundamentally motivated by money, etc. People obviously of wisdom, chachamim, nivonim, yiduim l'shiv techem. It's a whole literature regarding credentials and the qualifications for different levels in the Jewish judiciary, the highest level, of course, being the Sanhedrin Agdola, but even to be a Dayan and a Bezdin Shel Shalosh, the Rambam thinks, some debate whether it's Ma'ake, whether it's absolutely essential, only the Chatchila, if the language of the Rambam is pretty unmistakable myself, that it's really essential, but be that as it may, Yisro has all of these credentials. But the truth of the matter is if you look very carefully in the parallel section, at the beginning of Sefer Dvarim, in Parshas Dvarim, when Moshe Rabbeinu recounts this incident to the Jewish people, so there's a word that creeps up time and again. And Moshe says, again, alluding to this section of the Torah, "V'atzaveh shoftechem bo'esahi lemor." I told the shoftim, these newly appointed judges that I gathered, the Sarei Alefim, Sarei Meos, Sarei Chamishim, v'Sarei Asaros, I told all of them the following, "Shamoa." Listen, the first word that Moshe says Dayanim is you have to be good listeners. Right? To get anything right in Dayanus, to get anything right in life, the first thing you have to do is listen very, very well. Shamoa ben achechem ushvatatem tzedek. To be a listener. And I think this is the legacy of Vayishma Yisro, of the Shomea, par excellence. And it continues on from there, where Moshe says, you listen carefully. And if something is too difficult for you, takrivun elai ushma'ativ. Moshe doesn't say, I'll rule on it. It's interesting the way that he speaks about it. Moshe Rabbeinu says, I'll listen. I'll consider the matter. Going back to Parshas Yisro, we see that this dynamic of listening is contagious, but in the good sense of the term, right? The Torah tells us that after Yisro made a suggestion, Vayishma Moshe l'kol chosno, Vayas kol asher amar. Yisro's Shmia, Vayishma Yisro, directly catalyzes the Shmia of Moshe Rabbeinu. Vayishma Moshe l'kol chosno, Vayas kol asher amar. When people listen, when one person listens, it's contagious. Other people have a permission structure to listen as well. When people don't listen, when there's a culture of, everybody thinking that they have the entire truth, they have all of the answers, that other people aren't wrong, but evil, and the sense of, haughtiness and, condescension towards others, right? So then nobody's going to listen in return. Yisro contributed materially to a culture of Shmia, and he put his stamp, his personal stamp, Vayishma Yisro, on the situation, right? Shamoa ben achechem, bushvatem tzedek, ben ishu ben achiv, uven gero, lo sakiru fanim ba mishpat, lo sagur mipnei ish kem mishpat lelokimu. And as I said, davar sho yikshem ikem takrivun elayu shmativ. And it led to Moshe Rabbeinu listening himself. Ayishma Moshe lekol chosno vayas kol asher amar. So in response to the first question, I'd like to suggest is that the permission structure for somebody to come along and make what would otherwise be an audacious and brazen suggestion is the idea that the person doesn't hold themselves beyond the capacity of taking advice themselves. But when there is a person who's willing to project it, a person who says, look, you know, I was living a particular lifestyle for many, many, many decades, but I was a shomea myself. I've seen what benefits can come from listening carefully, from observing around me and making those changes, you know, and maybe you'd be willing to consider doing the same. It has a lot more power. It's a much more persuasive and compelling a model. And as we see, it's contagious. Vayishma Moshe l'kol chosno vayas kol asher amar. I think in a very fundamental way, this brings us now to the second question. We asked, especially according to the Manda Amar, Yisro la'achar matan Torah ba, but really according to all views, the location of this section of the Torah, right, is remarkable. Right? It is the parsha of the Aseres Hadibros, and Yisro's contribution is like, you know, inexorably linked, you know, for all, you know, eternity to Kabbalah Satorah. And I think the question is obvious, and you know, why? And it, especially, the question is uniquely pressing if you think that, you know, chronologically it really happened in a different order, but I think the question is in order across the board. And in many respects, I think this is the answer. Because to begin to understand what the culture of Torah and the culture of Halacha is about, the sine qua non is really the koach hashmia, is the ability to listen very carefully. Torah is complex, multi-layered, sophisticated. It lends itself to many different perspectives. Halacha as a system requires balancing many different perspectives, many different values, enormous breadth and range. And as we know, the entire halachic process is predicated on this shakla vitaria, on this give and take. There's a celebrated Gemara in Erefin, and justly so, Daf Yud Gimel, which talks about the halachic process. And in particular, really highlights the virtues of Shmiah in a very fascinating way. There, the Gemara discusses the machloksin, the disputes that existed between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai. And the Gemara says something which really requires much elaboration, not for now. Elu ve'elu devei Elokim chayim. That as far as truth is concerned, halachic truth, one can make an equal case for Beis Hillel Beis Shammai. But in the world of practice, halacha kedivrei Beis Hillel. We rule in accordance with Beis Hillel. The question is why? And the Gemara provides two answers that, in my judgment, are related to each other. Anybody happen to remember what the Gemara says about that? You know, was it just a simple question of like, acharei rabim lahatos, that there were more people in Beis Hillel, so we follow majority? What does the Gemara have to say? It's very striking.
Beit Hillel presented the arguments of Beit Shammai before they presented their own arguments.
Okay, good. So there were two answers given by the Gemara. Ben, excellent, said the second one, okay? But it's really related to the first one, so we'll put them together. The first answer is that Beis Hillel were nochin ve'aluvin, that they had a very calm temperament. Aluvin, like we have the expression, ne'lovin ve'inan olvin, people who can, you know, take a line turned at their expense and they don't feel like they have to respond in kind, right? This is a special quality of people who are secure, who don't feel the need to, you know, get into the mud, you know, trade again one-liners with people, nochen ve'aluvin, which is interesting. And then, as Ben said correctly, right, Beis Hillel, uniquely, this was their methodology, right? Shonim divrayim v'divrei Beis Shammai v'lo od. The Gemara says even more impressively than the fact that they really studied divrei Beis Shammai v'lo od, ela shehikdimu divrei Beis Shammai l'divrayhen. That before they would offer their interpretation, they would very carefully study the traditions of Beis Shammai, right? So the question is, what is this like? You know, in baseball, there's a gzeira, there's a halacha moshe misinai, the tie goes to the runner. Okay, why is it that way? Because that's the rule of baseball. It could just as easily be the opposite. The tie could go to the defensive team, but it doesn't. The tie goes to the runner. That's the halacha. So you could say, oh, what is it like? The tie goes to the nice person, you know. So what is this? So it's really very far from that. What the Gemara is really getting at is this idea that the koach hashmia, that Beis Hillel's willingness in the halachic process to take the view of their interlocutor very, very seriously, and not to, you know, use it as a straw man, you know, and to present the argument in its worst possible way, but to see the best virtues of the other side, their willingness to do that, and yet if they would then maintain their position, their disagreement, it gave their position a much greater veracity, because it gave us the confidence to understand that it wasn't that they had arrived at their position simply by instinct or proclivity, but through the process of very careful deliberation. It's a reflection of the truth value. It's exactly the virtue that we discussed by Yisro. If Yisro was willing to take into account, you know, in his own life, you know, Vayishma Yisro, whatever it was that he heard, but he was willing to listen and to make changes. So if Yisro in particular thinks that something is important, we're going to take it, you know, that much more seriously. And lest anybody think, you know, that like this was some kind of charade that, you know, Beis Hillel was, you know, going through, but they really, it was all a foregone conclusion. It's far from the case. Shas is replete with examples of Chazru Beis Hillel, Lahoros Kedivrei Beis Shammai, that Beis Hillel retracted their position. There's a very famous case called the Chatzi Eved Chatzi Ben Chorin, a person who had two masters, a slave, an Eved Knani. And one of the masters emancipated him, so now he's half free and half enslaved. This creates all kinds of halacha conflicts, because emancipation is a de facto conversion. So what does that mean in terms of Ishmir Tzamitzvos? And so Beis Hillel suggested, okay, you'll have to alternate days. You know, one day he'll work in his own shop and the other day he'll go to work for his master. And Beis Shammai say to Beis Hillel, you know, es rabo tikantem, es atzmo lo tikantem. They say, well, this works at one level because, you know, the guy is getting half time, the one remaining master, but es atzmo lo tikantem, it doesn't help the person because they can't marry anybody. The half of them that isn't within the Jewish fraternity, right, can't marry a Jewish woman. And Me'idach Gisa, on the other hand, right, you know, the part of him that's within the Jewish fraternity can't marry a Shechach Nanis. And the Gemara tells us, Chazur Beis Hillel, Haros Kedivrei Beis Shammai. They said, you're right. Our solution wasn't a good solution. And you're correct. And there are many such examples. So the point is, in the halachic process, listening is really invaluable. And in Pirkei Avos, for example, when we describe the virtues of a chacham and the absence of these virtues, Chazal says is associated with a golem, which is not a compliment. You know, and again, it's not hard to, you know, apply this back to our society. So many of there are seven virtues that Chazal list, but you know, what defines being a chacham? So just to go through three of them. What the Mishnah says is lo nichnas asoch devrei chaveiro. The person doesn't interrupt other people, right? Other people are talking, they're actually listening, they're interested in hearing, right? Eino nivhal lahashiv, they don't rush to respond, right? This is very consonant with the idea of hevu misunim badin, the first Mishnah in Perkei Avos, that you should take things very seriously, and we consider things from all different perspectives. Try as much as possible to appreciate what the consequences, what the hashlachot, the applications will be of arriving at particular decisions and how that will then impact downstream decisions, all of these virtues. And then also to have the humility, right? Eino medaber bifnei misha gadol mimenu, the person understands the value of seniority. And if somebody's a greater expert, they don't try to pretend to be the world expert in every subject under the sun. This is part of how we define what a chacham is. when Shlomo HaMelech first ascended to the throne, before things started to go off the rails, Shlomo HaMelech commented to Hashem when Hashem appeared to him in Givon, very famously at the beginning, Na'ar Anochi, and he felt very inadequate to the task, as so many Jewish leaders have throughout the ages, as Moshe Rabbeinu himself did, right? And the truth of the matter is that Kadosh Baruch Hu says to Shlomo, so how can I help, essentially? What can I give you? And Shlomo Melech says, what I'd like is a Lev Shomea. So who could do the job of bringing mishpat, of bringing justice to the people, of being the very best leader that I can, if I don't have siyata d'shmaya, if I don't have divine assistance in terms of cultivating a Lev Shomea, right? And we know that Shlomo goes on to be, a famously excellent listener, the tale of the Nashim Zonot, of splitting the baby, how he's able to discern who the real mother is by listening carefully. The one who said that, my son is alive and her son is dead, versus the other one who said, her son is the dead son and my son is alive. That inversion of subject, which led him to understand, who the real mother was long before splitting the baby. That was just the Raya L'davar. So again, Shlomo, understands the value, from a leadership perspective, and from being in a position of bringing halacha and mishpat to Klal Yisrael, he understands the value, the real necessity of having a Lev Shomea, of being somebody who's fully capable of being a listener. And I think that this is the perfect lead-in in that respect to Kabbalah Satorah. Because what Kabbalah Satorah is about is obviously, the bridging of Shamayim Va'aretz. You take mortal, limited human beings and expose them to Dvar Elokim, something which is immutably, eternally true, and to try to apply as best as we can in our humble way to our lives to live up to divine standards. And it's not without its challenges and its controversies. And what's really required, like I said, as part of this process to become an active member and not just a passive recipient of the Torah, but to become an active member of the halachic community, is to really cultivate the ability to appreciate the wisdom, the perspectives of all of those who are engaged in the discipline, and then to be able to try to come out, on the other side. This is what was distinctive about the halachic process. Lo bashamayim hi, from the moment of Kabbalah Satorah and onwards, right, the ball was in our court. And that had very considerable implications. And if the ball's in our court, then we have a great responsibility to demonstrate care and consideration for the Torah, lo bashamayim hi. That means to try to work as hard as we can to understand the full depth and profundity of the different perspectives and to try to find the best possible path in any given, halachic case to be able to arrive at the best version of halachic truth. HaKadosh Baruch Hu isn't going to simply do it for us. The responsibility, is ours. And we say this in a Kwanan in terms of cultivating that, is very much this koach hashmia, the ability to listen very well, very attentively, and then to be able to arrive, at far-reaching conclusions that hopefully, like Beis Hillel, have far greater truth value because they were rooted in deep consideration and reflection of the variety of perspectives that exist, across any particular topic. Now, this brings me to, I think, another aspect of Yisro, which I think is truly critical. One of the most contentious aspects of the Yisro narrative, has to do with, what ended up happening to him. We have in our parsha, really an enigmatic line, the last section before the Matan Torah narrative begins. Vayishalach Moshe es chosno, vayilech lo el artzo. Yisro went back to Midian. And the real question is, what happened? And there isn't a consensus on this issue. The Ramban, weighs all the evidence, Kedarko, and he says that it seems to him, based on Psukim in Parshas Paloscha, while it's not this positive, it seems to him that Yisro eventually remained with the Jewish people and went with them into the land of Israel. The Sforno, in contrast, takes a different approach and says that Yisro, as he indicates in Ki El Artzivil Malatzi Eilech, that he would go back to his native environment, that Yisro did not travel with the Jewish people to the land of Israel. Now, it is true, as the Sforno notes, that we meet B'nai Yisro, the Keni, at various points, in Tanakh, Ya'el Ishas Chever HaKeni, and then we meet them again in Sefer Shmuel, in the story of Amalek, that when Shaul, has to battle Amalek, he warns Yisro's descendants not to get too closely involved in the battle, that there shouldn't be collateral damage, etc. So the Sforno posits that Yisro, went home himself, but the family, went on with the Jewish people to the land of Israel. So just like the beginning of the story is enigmatic in terms of Vayishma Yisro, we don't know exactly what spurred him, into motion, the different theories, different traditions, whether it was Matan Torah, whether it was Melchemes Amalek, whether it was Kriyas Yamsuf. The end of the story, is equally, shrouded in this mystery. What exactly happened, to Yisrael? Which to me, given these kind of mysterious bookends, puts an even greater pressure, on the center of gravity in the story, what Yisrael contributed when we do know he was around. And that was the role of the Dayanim. And so I'd like to take a close look at how Yisro's contribution, might have impacted the Jewish people, and to pick up on a tradition from the Midrash that Rashi cites and to try to amplify it to support the basic thesis that I'm pursuing tonight, the notion of the Koach HaShmiya. Rashi comments based on the Midrash that when Yisro saw what was going on, he had a very strong reaction. Lo tov hadavar asher ata useh. He says to Moshe, this is not a good thing. Navolti bol gam ata, you will be worn down by this. Gam ha mazah asher imach, right? That people are going to be worn down as well. Lo tuchal asahu levadach. And there's a basic and fundamental disagreement as to what, was bothering Yisro. And there are those who take what I like to call the McKinsey approach, or if you prefer, Bain, that Yisro was like a management consultant, and he thought that this was like an inefficiency, and, v'chol ha'am nitzav alecha min boker ad arev, that people are waiting all day, and it's like the DMV, and, it's just bad. Rashi emphatically adopts a more fundamental position. Rashi says it wasn't so much a question of efficiency, but it was a question of principle. Substance and principle. Hare ata mizalzel b'chvodan shel Yisrael. Ata yoshev levadecha kemelech. You sit alone as if you're some kind of a king. V'chol ha'am nitzav alecha min boker ad arev. That Yisro's concern was the idea of, coming to the wise man, and everybody, stands online all day and all night, for, the wisdom. Right? What that does is it degrades the Jewish people. That, I think, is a very, very critical point. What Yisro was sensitive to was that this Am HaNivchar, this chosen people, who he so uniquely appreciated, had been chosen by God, Asher Hitzilas Cham Yad Mitzrayim Yad Paro, Asher Hitzilas Ha'am Mitachas Yad Mitzrayim. They weren't meant simply to be followers, but they were meant to be active participants. The idea of them waiting online all day, as if to see the king, doesn't give them an active role in the process, which is really what we're looking for in terms of Kabbalah Satorah. We didn't get the Torah just so that one incredibly wise person, uniquely close to God, could tell us everything. We got the Torah to be actively involved in it, to be doing what we're doing literally right now, 9:10 on a Thursday evening, is studying it closely and, talking about it and thinking about it and reflecting on it. And part of what Yisro did wasn't just develop an efficient system, but Yisro decentralized the system of Torah. Sarei Alafim, Sarei Meos, Sarei Chamishim, Sarei Asaros. That means a judge for every 10 people. That means that everybody would know a Dayan. Every young person growing up would say, I know that Dayan. right? And maybe I could be like him one day. Or I know that's Sar Chamishim, right? I don't know if there are, 150 people in your shul, there'd be three of them, right? You'd meet them, you'd know them. You would think to yourself, maybe I could, grow up one day to be like that. It creates a model of engagement in the process of Torah. And that's really the critical thing. The Klal Yisrael lo bashamayim, the Kabbalah Satorah is about, our responsibility for the halachic process. And that Yisrael felt that the system that was set up was not conducive to the Jewish people taking responsibility. It was too passive. It was too centralized in the figure of Moshe Rabbeinu. Again, now this wasn't like Moshe Rabbeinu's, intent. Moshe Rabbeinu ish Moshe anav mod mikol adam asher al pnei adama. Moshe wasn't looking to aggregate power for himself, but this was the result. That all of it was stored, in him. The people weren't, mobilized and engaged to be mevakshei Hashem. They weren't mobilized and engaged to be involved, in the Torah process, to be, insiders in that debate, to, be capable of engaging in that Milchamta Shel Torah. And I think Yisro's perception that this was critically important wasn't just from that point of view a matter of efficiency, but as we say, is a matter of principle and belongs directly before Kabbalah Satorah. So what we're going to do on Shabbos when we reread and to some extent re-experience, we all stand for the Aseres HaDibros. I imagine the Rambam wasn't so happy about that. He has a famous tshuva. I was worried about, promoting that over other sections of the Torah. But the point is, we recreate it, we re-experience it, we reimagine what it was like. So when we receive the Torah, we don't receive the Torah to be passive. We receive the Torah to very much be insiders in the system, to be involved and to be active, and to try to understand and to try to grow and to try to study and to develop our ability to appreciate all of those perspectives, something that Yisro was truly an exemplar of, the listener par excellence, somebody who took the ideas very, very, very seriously himself. And as we said, was willing to make, far reaching and fundamental changes on the basis of that. And so even if it was the case, if the Sforno is correct, let's say, Vayelech lo al arzo, never to return, Yisro left us with this kind of an eternal gift. Because it's not just that, okay, now we have Dayanim, now we have judges, great, we'll have a more efficient system. It's so much more than that. It's a certain attitude of engagement, of involvement in Torah. But like we say, engagement with the understanding that there are going to be many, 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 many different perspectives, and that it takes an enormous amount of effort and diligence and a lifetime of study and very, very careful listening to be able to cultivate, a proper, refined, attuned halachic outlook. And that this is something that really does, comprise in a substantive way the work of a lifetime. This was, even if Yisro literally exited stage right, this was an indelible contribution to what Kabbalah's, HaTorah is all about. I just wanted to conclude, my presentation by reflecting, in this vein on a very celebrated Gemara in Masech the Shabbos about the nature of Kabbalah Satorah, one that I think very powerfully highlights the theme that we're talking about, of Yisro and what Yisro's contribution was, and how Yisro's koach hashmia, his ability and willingness to listen, his ability to integrate the message of the Torah and to develop and, and change in his own perspective, his own practice, to be nichnas tachas kanfei hashchina, I think is manifest and, sets a very high bar, for all of us. So Gemara in Shabbos, talks about the scene just before Matan Torah. Gemara tells us Moshe ala lamarom, that Moshe Rabbeinu ascended, to the celestial realm. And there, a great controversy had broken out regarding the prospect of Matan Torah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, was planning on going ahead with Kabbalah Satorah, giving the Torah. And the Malachim we're not on board. Okay, so, you know, they're not in favor of this policy. And the Malachim start making very powerful arguments against giving the Torah. And the arguments are varied, but they essentially boil down to the idea of, here you have Torah, which is truth, which represents purity, and you're about to take that Torah and you're about to, you know, give it to people who are liars, who are cheats, who are impure, who sin in so many different kinds of ways. You know, what kind of Kavodat Torah is this? And fascinating, in the Gemara, it's obviously in Agada, Kadosh Baruch Hu listens to them. He listens to the Malachim. And he says, okay, these are some very serious concerns that you've raised here to be taken under consideration. And he says to Moshe, would you like to respond? Interestingly, Moshe says, yes, but first I would like to hold on to the Kisei HaKavod so that they don't incinerate me. Apparently angels can do that if they don't like what you're saying. But Moshe assumes some kind of a secure position, and he responds in the following way. He says, you know, well, what exactly is included in the Torah? And he starts going through, you know, the Aseres HaDibros. He says, you know, it says here that we shouldn't, you know, murder, right? And it says here that we shouldn't have immorality, lotinav. It says here that we shouldn't steal. It says that we shouldn't be telling lies, losanav reachayit shaker. It says that we shouldn't covet or envy, losachmod. So he starts asking the angels, you know, is there a lot of crime up here? A lot of stealing that you guys have? Is there a lot of immorality? Is there a lot of niyof? Is there a lot of murder? Is there a lot of ritzicha? Is there a lot of, you know, lying in court? Are there a lot of, you know, Edim Shkarim? You have Edim Zomin up here. And of course, the angels say, no, we don't have any of that. So Moshe says, okay, he anosenes. That's exactly why we need the Torah. Because what's the idea? The Gemara is saying is that the Torah is given to Klal Yisrael, right? Not because, you know, like, you know, upon receiving it, we already had everything mastered, but because, you know, it had the capacity to shape us in material ways. The Malachim didn't need the Torah and therefore didn't receive the Torah, because whatever being an angel means, it already means having achieved a certain state, you know, of perfection. For us, receiving the Torah, you know, is not about having a nice shiny object to put on the shelf and to, you know, look at every now and again. But it's meant to be a blueprint. It's meant for us to completely immerse ourselves in, to the point of, you know, really shaping our lives. And if you'd ask me, can you give me a paragon of such a person, of a person who looked at the Torah, or who looked at the truth, you know, and was willing and able to make, you know, far-reaching, profound changes? I would say, yeah. Atayadati ki gadol Hashem mikol Elohim ki badavar asher zadu aleihem Yisro himself. Vayishma Yisro. His koach hashmia, his willingness to engage. And that's really what he wanted for the Jewish people. When he told Moshe, lo tova davar asher ata oseh, what he was telling him was, don't allow them to be passive. Don't allow them just to be, you know, amongst those who stand online, min habokir ad ha'arev. Make sure that this Torah for them, kim chayenu ve'orach yamenu, is an active engagement. It's something that they can be involved in. Yes, there are going to be, you know, questions that they can't resolve. And you're going to need to be involved in that. I don't deny that, Yisro said, but there's a lot of things that they can do, much more than they're being given the room to do right now. Sarei alafim, sarei meos, sarei chamishim, sarei asaros. And if you don't believe that people, you know, can rise to that occasion, then look at the story of Yisro's life, right? Al shepitem agalim lavodazara, and he's then miyaser parsha achas b'Torah. He's chovav shechibei v'satara. He's reuel. He achieves a reyus with Hashem. He didn't start there. He was the kohen midyan. He was a kohen lavodazara, but he came, you know, very, very far. He's exactly the avatar of what the Gemara in Masechta Shabbos is talking about. The Malachim don't need to achieve anything, but human beings do. Right? We have a Avodah Zarah amongst us. We need a message of Lo Yelecha Elohim Acharim Al Panai. We have thieves and deceit amongst us. We need the message of Lo Sana Bereicha Et Shaker and Lo Sachmod. We have envy amongst us. We have all of these things. And it's an extremely important idea. And Yisro, again, even if, you know, then he turns around and for whatever reason, Vayelech Lo Al Arzo, even if he never came back, his contribution to our sense of what it means to have the Torah is really an indelible imprint, an active orientation towards hearing deeply Torah messages, reflecting deeply on the complexity of Torah and the capacity of Torah to really change, the core of our being, our very, outlook on the world. There's a sentence just to conclude with. That the Rav, Rabbi Soloveitchik, wrote, that stands out, in connection with this, which is the final sentence of a beautiful, though challenging essay that he wrote called The Halachic Mind, which is really about the philosophy of science, and then as applied to how halacha works as a system. The Rav says the following, and it should be understood properly, and I'll wrap up with this. Out of the sources of halacha, a new worldview awaits formulation. That when a person looks at the sources of Torah, it's not just, stand online, boker ad arev, get your instructions from the wise man. A new worldview awaits formulation. It's about impacting us to the very core of our being. And these halachic sources, individually and especially in aggregate, like they did for Yisro, can redefine our entire Weltanschauung, our entire perspective on the world, what it means to live in the world, how it is to orient ourselves, right? And like I said, it's not because we have all the answers, but because we're committed to listen, to internalize, classic texts of Torah, different perceptions of Torah, work our way through machloksin, elu velu divrei Elokim chayim. Sometimes, like Beis Hillel, we'll be chozer lahoros kedivrei Beis Shammai. We'll recognize that maybe we were heading down the wrong path. Sometimes we'll stick to our guns. But the point is that we'll look at these things not in a passive way, but in a very active way, with an appreciation for how they can, in the most fundamental and far-reaching of ways, shape our lives, shape our way of perceiving the world. It all started with one profound listener, Vayishma Yisro, who perceived that which was going on around him. It continuing on with Moshe, Vayishma Yisro, Vayishma Moshe l'kol chosno. It continued with the Dayanim, Shamoa ben Achechem u'shvatetem tzedek. And ultimately, it continues on with each and every member of Klal Yisrael, Na'aseh, but not only Na'aseh, but Na'aseh v'nishma, that we agree, we accept to be Mekabel Torah exactly in this way, with an openness, a willingness to engage, the ability to appreciate new perspectives, unlike the Malachim, who have no room for growth and no capacity for change. They are the Omdin. We are the Mahalchim, Menasati B'cha Mahalchim Ben HaOmdim, Ho'ela, we have the capacity to internalize Torah messages, to be able to change in the most far-reaching of ways our engagement and perception of the world. Thank everybody very much. I left about 5 minutes or so, just exactly 5 minutes. If there are any questions, I saw people putting some things. I couldn't read them as they were going, but if people have any questions or comments that they want to make, please, by all means, just to use the time effectively.
Thank you. Thank you very much. You want to take a look at the chat books? You want me to
read? Okay. I'm just, okay. So I'm catching up on it here.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, okay. Very good. So Ben asked, this is the point that I just got to, what do we do with Na'aseh v'nishma? Right. So that was the point that I wanted to make, that initially the Jewish people said, this is what you have recorded in this week's Sedra, Kol Asher Diber Hashem Na'aseh. That was the initial formulation. It's not until next week, until Parshas Mishpatim, that we have, Na'aseh v'nishma. So what I'm suggesting is that's the difference between, passively receiving the Torah you know, waiting online minaboker v'ara for the wise man to tell you what to do, versus nishma, that we're going to try to really internalize and have a much more lo bashamayimi active, you know, engagement Torah. Right. So, Rabbi Kalman says, explains by motion Devarim begins Shemo ben Achechem Shantim Tzedek. Right. That's exactly the point. The first word that he ever says to Dayanim is that they have to really be good listeners, right? And as we said, they said to him, you know, Takrivun Elai Ushmativ, or he said to them that I'll listen, you know, we'll see what I come up with. What was the issue being debated at the time that Elu Ve'elu is traced back to? It's very interesting. The Gemara says that Beisol and Beishamai were having actually in this context, you know, a philosophical dispute, you know, they didn't only talk about matters of this technical halacha, there's a discussion about, let's say, man's position in the world, and whether we think that, let's say it's a positive thing that the human beings have created, Tov La'adam Shenivra, Tov La'adam Shelo Nivra, what would have been better? So Beisol and Beishamai are different sides of that. And then there's a kind of a pshara which is offered, which is, maybe it would have been better that people, you know, hadn't been created in terms of all the failures that we have. But Achshav Shenivra, Yefashish Masav, we have the capacity to grow, very similar to what we discussed tonight. And so that was a machlokas, it's Shalosh Shanim Nechaku, Beishamai and Beis Hillel, that they were in that debate for a very long time. How much respect did Yisra have in Midian? Right. Okay. Good. That's an important, another question from Ben. So Ben says, what was Yisra's position in Midian? So I think the evidence here is a little bit mixed. On the one hand, the fact that they were harassing Yisra's daughters is, pretty strong evidence that, Yisro may not have been, in a position, at that point in time, of prestige. Otherwise, like, why would they be harassing his daughters, the shepherds? On the other hand, I think that the Torah goes out of its way in this context, the first Aliyah of Parshas Yisro, Torah goes out of its way to present Yisro as the Chohen Midyan. Vayishma Yisro, Chohen Midyan, Chosen Moshe. So I think the very strongly held view in Chazal is that he was giving up something. El Hamidbar Asher Chon Hashem, Yoshev B'chodo Shel Olam V'yatza Misham, Lishmo Adivrei Elokim Chayim, that tradition, which is embraced by Rashi, by the Ramban, by many others, seems to assume that he was in a position of great authority and prestige. In fact, if you, just look at the way that the Torah presents Yisro throughout this, the first Aliyah in particular. So the first time he's introduced, as I mentioned, he's Yisro, Cholin Midyan, Chosein Moshe. Next time he's referred to, it says, Vayavo Yisro, Chosein Moshe. He's called the Chosein Moshe. So the Kohen Midyan is already dropped. Right now, this is the process of transformation. By the end, it's just Vayomer Yisro, Baruch Hashem, Asher Hitzil Eschem Yad Mitzrayim Yad Paro. It's Yisro without any qualifiers, right? He's undergoing a transformation. So I would suggest that he really was, according to the Pshat, in a position of prestige, even though, again, we do have that medrash that Ben was alluding to, namely the idea of Sheni Duhu, that because Yisro was such a seeker, apparently he had run afoul of whatever the conventions of Midianite of Avodah Zarah were. He had gone too far, and they felt that they had to bring him back into line, as these things go. He was censured by the RCA or whatever it was for being out of line. That's a non-trivial point. So I appreciate that, Ben. I see Ben was very active here. People can complain about having meat and fish in Egypt. Yisro can offer suggestions, just the mood of the times, right? Right. Yeah. Well, I think that those, I would just respond to that, those complaints weren't received that well. They were taken as pretty brazen, right? Okay. So that's, Ben, I appreciate all of the contributions.
I'm actually not sure that they were taken as brazen, the complaints of the Jewish people. They were taken brazen by Moshe, but not by God. I was just reading, Leon Cass's book, his wonderful book on Shemot. He points that out, that if you look carefully, God totally understands that a group of slaves are going to complain when there's no water and there's no food. That's why, that was understandable. And yeah. They had to be taught, but it's Moshe who got upset. That's just a total aside. But if you want to stay online for another hour, which I see Ellen wants to know if Moshe received only the Aseret HaDibrot or the entire Torah at Mount Sinai. I can let you answer that in 30 seconds, but I do think that requires at least an hour, maybe 10, to fully address that question. Right. It's a complex question. What exactly he got? I'll let you answer.
So let me just say the following, which is that there is a kind of a middle ground, and that is a tradition of the Yerushalmi that was popularized by Rav Sadia Gaon, namely that the Aseret HaDibros are a microcosmic version of the entire Torah. So even if we'll assume that the Aseret HaDibros, which there is a lot of evidence for, is kind of a corpus in its own right. The Gemara Brachos actually refers to that in the first parak, Mikra is a separate category than the Aseret HaDibros. Asher Kasavti Elu Nevi'im Uksubim Lehorosam is a Torah Shebaal Peh, so the different categories, and Aseret HaDibros may be separate and distinct, but even within that framework, right, the tradition of the Yerushalmi is that the Aseret HaDibros, and again, Sadia Gaon popularized this idea, that you can fit into the Aseret HaDibros all of Tariag Mitzvos, that these are kind of bullet points. If you can imagine, when the Torah says, lo tinaf, that the people shouldn't be immoral and engage in Eishes Ish, a married, intrude on other people's marriages. So there are many, 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 many halachos that have to do with forbidden relationships that fit under that dibur. And it's a quick another example of, there are four Torah-level prohibitions in the second dibur, of lo yelucha. But the Rambam in Hilchos Avodah Zarah and in the Sefer HaMitzvos enumerates 51 prohibitions having to do with Avodah Zarah. So the point is that you can, fit in 51 different prohibitions there. So, a good way to think about the Aseret HaDibros might be like size 48 font on each of the Aseret HaDibros. And then underneath that, I'm just really using a mashal from the Yerushalmi, in size 12 font or whatever, all of the details. So maybe there's a third way, in terms of your question.
Okay, thank you very much. Yeshua Koach, very nice. Next Thursday night, Rabbi Benji Samuels from Boston, or I guess not quite Boston. Where is he? Not Sharon. One of the towns just outside of Boston.
Newton. Right?
Newton, that's right. Hit me. Newton, not Duches. We'll be giving the shiur next week. Of course, my shiur on the Seder. We're hearing Birchut Kriyat Shema tomorrow morning at 9:30. And Rabbi Liebtag on Sunday will pick up on your talk. Is he giving a whole series on chronology in the Bible, the whole problem of chronology, what happened first, many of the arguments, of course, from Ben Rashi about when events took place in Torah. So that's a new series with Rabbi Liebtag starting at 11:15 Sunday morning. And as I mentioned in my email this morning, there are our second new series next week, in addition to all our regular classes. Rabbi Adam Mintz will be giving a four-part series on the halacha of a history of Erev. His book was just published in January of 2023, so that's like pretty recent. And that was his PhD thesis on the history of Erev. For those of you who live in Toronto, we'll of course be giving one of his classes on the history of Toronto Erev, which I believe was the second or third Erev built in North America. St. Louis was the first that I know. I don't know if Toronto was the second or third, but of course, those of people who live in Toronto know there's an interesting history with the Toronto Eruv, which we'll leave for that. Anyway, then we have all the record classes. So nice to see everybody. I want to thank again Rabbi Freeman. I'm very impressed if you understand halachic mind. I haven't looked at that book for a long time, but I didn't understand one word of it. I think like many people who read it, but yes, it's quite halachic man is hard enough. Halachic mind is like, in a level by its own. I don't know how many people have read it, but it's really one of the books written by the Rav that it's not studied so often. I think it is a very, very difficult book, but Yashar Koach and Yashar Koach on the Shir. We look forward to seeing everybody soon, and everybody have a wonderful night and Shabbat Shalom. Invite a friend to come and join. Okay. Thank you, everybody.
Lila, thank you, and Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom.
Hey, everybody. Thank you. Thank you.